Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session pursuant to law.
Thank you all. Please be seated. Good morning. Welcome back for the second hearing today at the University of Idaho College of Law on February 12, 2025, a case entitled State of Idaho versus Corey Lee Adams, number 50841. In this case, the state is the appellant, represented by Ken Jorgensen, and the respondent, Corey Lee Adams, is represented by Kylie Hefner. Counsel, do either of you have preliminary matters for us before argument?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Jorgensen, sir.
May it please the court. Lawful custody entails two things. First, it involves a reduction of the reasonable expectation of privacy. And second, it also causes certain special governmental needs in relation to things like safety, integrity of facilities, those sorts of things. In the context of a search incident to arrest, these balance out to say that an officer may conduct a search of the person he is taking into custody. It also means that persons in jails or other facilities may be searched within certain limits. There is no reason to distinguish, in this case or any other, between custody arising not from an arrest in a criminal matter, but instead arising from the institutionalization of a person on a state mental hold. That's what happened in this case. Mr. Adams was decreed by a court to be both mentally ill and either a threat to himself or others or incapable of managing his own affairs.
And that was before the incident that we're dealing with, correct?
That is correct. He had already been, by court order, put into custody of the state. He had been evaluated at a local hospital. During that evaluation, he had become very belligerent, he had become obstreperous, he had become difficult. So the medical evaluators called the police to transfer him to an actual mental facility for further evaluation. When the police showed up, he was no longer obstreperous or combative. He was, in fact, cooperative. However, before placing him in a police car, the officer conducted initially a pat-down search, and upon finding what he believed might be a baggie, he then reached into the pocket to remove the baggie, and that's when the controlled substances were found.
So help me understand, you used the phrase earlier, search incident to arrest. This individual had already been seized, I guess arguably arrested or taken into custody, had spent time at one hospital, and then was merely being transported from hospital A to hospital B.
Correct.
Why did that give rise to a new search incident to arrest, or a search at all, if he was already in state's custody?
That wouldn't have been any different than searching an inmate prior to transferring him, say, from the jail to the courthouse or from one facility to another facility.
But an inmate's been adjudicated guilty of something.
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
An inmate or a prisoner or... We're batting words here,
yes,
but the point I'm saying is this man hadn't been adjudicated of committing a crime.
That is correct. He had not been adjudicated of committing a crime. However, he was placed in state custody pursuant to the mental hold. So he was really no different than, say, a pretrial, somebody pretrial who's in state custody, who hasn't bailed out, who is actually subject to the state's control.
So just understand what you've just told me then. You're saying that moving a mental health a prisoner held pursuant to a mental health hold of some kind, an order of the court, transferring them from one facility to another is analogous of taking a convicted felon from the county jail to the state prison?
It is analogous in the sense that it is the exact same physical act that the officer is performing.
The act may be the same, but the person and their circumstances is not the same, correct?
That is correct.
And perhaps the expectation of privacy might be different because of the different circumstances.
No, Your Honor. That is exactly the point here, is that, for example, if Mr. Adams had arrived at the facility and a nurse, for example, had been concerned about what he had in his pockets, the nurse could have likewise conducted the search. In other words, often what happens in these types of situations is people lose a certain amount of liberty. Obviously, they lose the liberty to be out and about and choose where they go and when they go there. They also lose certain liberties, such as what clothing to wear, what things they can and can't possess in that facility. So it would be entirely reasonable for either a state institution or a private institution that is contracted with the state to hold these people and evaluate them, to also take steps to make sure that they do not have contraband or other things that will be deleterious to the institution or the individual. A search by a nurse of his drawers, of his clothing, those sorts of things would have been just as appropriate. So under the circumstances, yes, it is entirely appropriate for state agents, whether those agents be police officers, doctors, nurses, or other persons, to actually conduct searches to make sure that somebody does not have what is contraband for that facility.
Is it safe for us to assume, or does the record show this clearly, that at the time he was initially taken into custody and put in Hospital A, that he was searched, and he was searched for weapons at that time?
The record does not reflect that. We have no idea whether his coming into custody was initially through law enforcement. We have no idea whether exactly how this happened. All we know is that he had been decreed by a court to be subject to
it. Is it reasonable, though, to assume that law enforcement picked him up, didn't search him for weapons, take him to the hospital, leave him there, and nobody searched for weapons during any of that time?
It is reasonable only to assume that that is one possible scenario by which he came into custody. There may be many other scenarios by which he came into custody. And I would submit that it doesn't really matter which of those scenarios actually happened. It was still reasonable for this officer in this circumstance, where he has taken this individual into custody, to transport him to a mental hospital or mental facility where he will be held against his will. It is entirely reasonable before putting him in a police car to ascertain whether he has anything dangerous to the officer or other contraband that he may try to sequester in the car, or that he might try to then smuggle into the facility.
And as the officers, when the officer comes in and puts him in the patrol car, is that the moment at which the state took custody of him? I understand there was a prior declaration from the court, but...
Not necessarily, Your Honor. This record isn't exactly clear on that, but the inference is that the order had been issued previously and that he was in the original hospital based on this order. So at that point, it would appear that the doctors that were doing the initial evaluation and the hospital were acting as state agents. He was in state custody at that point, and these doctors are then acting as state agents on state contracts in order to evaluate him, in order to treat him, and otherwise provide for him.
I have a question. If the record shows this, why... Number one, why the police were called, and I'm assuming that's because he had been belligerent, confrontational, and so forth with Hospital A, but how he was going to get to Hospital B if the police were not called? Was there a different mode of transportation? Might not much matter, but I've been curious about that from the beginning.
Your Honor, to my knowledge, the record does not reflect that. I am unaware in Twin Falls County exactly how mental hold patients are transferred between facilities. It would not surprise me, of course, to say that that is always done by law enforcement officers given the circumstances. In other words, where you have a situation where it's an involuntary transfer and an involuntary custody, some security is always going to be appropriate. It wouldn't surprise me at all if, in order to facilitate those things, they utilize officers just as they did in this particular case.
You've analogized to search incident to arrest. Is there any other theory under which the state might proceed forward? For example, is there an element of community caretaking that would justify a search in the state's view?
Yes, Your Honor. We're kind of under the entire rubric of the community caretaking function, because this has no involvement whatsoever with criminal proceedings, at least until they find the contraband. In other words, all of the custody is civil. All of the interaction with him is civil. So it falls under the community caretaking rubric, certainly. We have analogized that to the search incident to arrest because we believe that the exception that actually applies is the state special needs, the governmental special needs exception, which is...
Sorry, but that's different than community caretaking, isn't it? Those are different. Community caretaking and special needs are different justifications for a warrantless search, aren't they?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And that is because in this particular case, the custody itself arises out of the community caretaking function.
And I ask because the detention may arise out of the community caretaking function, but I don't see special needs referenced at all in either Katie or Coniglia. Special needs is a separate justification raised in a separate Supreme Court decision. And so I'm not sure they can conflate that way. Community caretaking may justify the detention. What justifies the subsequent search is a separate question.
And that is exactly the analysis we are putting before this court.
So my struggle is I don't see special needs raised in your opening brief. We held in State versus Doe, one of the Does, there's a number of them, a 2010 Doe, that there was a two-part balancing test that we employ when determining whether special needs exception applies. I didn't see that test referenced in either your opening brief or your reply, and I don't see any balancing of the factors identified. So help me understand how you've preserved a special needs argument here.
Yes, Your Honor. All of the cases that we have cited relied on this exception. They analogized it to search incident to arrest. So all of the cases that we have cited in the brief that have applied this exception have done so under this theory. So, yes, the state has presented this theory to this court for its consideration.
And I understand you want us to analogize to search incident to arrest, but at least one of the justifications recognized for search incident to arrest, preservation of evidence, avoiding the destruction of evidence, doesn't apply here.
Correct.
So doesn't that necessarily change the balancing of the two factors? We have to do a new balancing to determine what the extent, if a search is permitted, and if so, what the extent of the search is. And I say that because it strikes me, why isn't the outside pat of the pockets enough when you balance the two factors, which are the individual's interests in privacy with the state's interests that are motivating the attempted search or the frisk?
To address that last part, the search of the pockets, let me start with this. The frisk, the pat at the outside, is to determine if there are weapons.
Right.
Why would there then be a need to search for something like contraband? And the answer to that comes from not from a need to preserve evidence, obviously, but for a need to preserve the safety and integrity of the facilities. So, obviously, in a mental hold situation, just as taking somebody to jail, we would want to know whether that person is bringing drugs into the jail. And we're not necessarily going to know that through the simple expediency of a frisk of the outside of the clothing.
Why does law enforcement need to conduct that emptying of the pockets? Why can't the facility conduct it?
Either way, it's a state action and it's a state search. So I'm not sure why that would make any difference in this case. At some point, whether it's done at the facility, whether it's done by the officer before transporting it to the facility, no matter what you're talking about a search to make sure that this person isn't bringing contraband into that facility, that it is done by a contractor of the state as opposed to a law enforcement officer should make no difference to the constitutional analysis. Therefore, the fact that an officer did it as opposed to a nurse or an orderly or something along those lines ultimately makes no difference. If this type of search is allowed in this type of circumstance, then this law enforcement officer properly did it.
And I want to go back to Justice Ahn's question about preservation. Did the prosecutor in Twin Falls County make this special needs exception argument? As I read their argument, was this is a community caretaking exception, which in looking more at this case, I'm not sure there is such a thing. I think it's more of a rubric. There are exceptions that flow from there, like special needs or preservation of evidence or whatever. So Did the prosecutor talk special needs ever, cite a couple cases that might have it in there? How's it preserved even to get to
the case? Yeah, the prosecutor, if I can, you know, 12-point font may be wonderful, but it requires a little help for me. I'd refer the court to transcript page 24, starting at line 3 through page 25, line 16. And there the state relies on a case, State versus Cutler. It's a court of appeals case. And it is a case in which both the custody and the search were justified under the community caretaking function. Now, have I groomed this horse just a little bit? Yes, I have. But the state did specifically raise the idea that a search incident to the custody is appropriate in this case. And it's appropriate for similar reasons to search incident to arrest. It's appropriate based upon the custody that flows from the community caretaking function of institutionalizing a mentally ill person who is either a threat of harm to himself or others or incapable of managing his own affairs. Because the custody was lawful, that did create the need and the appropriateness of a search prior to transporting Mr. Adams to a mental health facility. Therefore, the district court did err, and the state does request that this court reverse the order granting suppression.
Is it your argument that the search didn't need to be triggered by anything, that they just had a right to do it no matter what the circumstances? Because I guess there's a fallback position that there may have been some kind of reasonable suspicion given the belligerent behavior, given that he was in a hospital, given that he could have grabbed a pen or a scalpel or something while he was in the hospital, that there was some independent basis to have reasonable suspicion to search him before he was placed in the car.
Your Honor, I'm not sure how the reasonable suspicion works into this. I mean, obviously, any degree of suspicion would justify some search or other action on behalf of the government agent for somebody in custody.
Let me explain myself. If the officer had been asked to transport this individual who had been behaving very well in Hospital A, like, hey, we just need to move him to Hospital B for further evaluation, that might be a different case than here where we had reports that patient was misbehaving and was acting violent and was being abusive to staff. And that may have created an independent basis for reasonable suspicion prior to placing him in the police car.
Of course, the state's position is that no such independent justification is required.
Understood.
But it would have existed in this case. I mean, his prior belligerent behavior did suggest a heightened safety concern. It's the state's position in this case, as it would be in any sort of search incident or arrest situation, that the search incident to arrest does not have to be justified on a case-by-case basis. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected that analysis, and so that's one of the reasons why, Justice Zahn, I haven't argued that it was justified on a case-by-case basis. It is justified in any situation where there is an arrest. The state doesn't have to point to any suspicion that evidence will be obtained through it. The state doesn't have to point to any evidence that the person is armed and dangerous. An arrest, that custody, triggers that the reasonableness of that kind of search. And that's what happened here. It's the custody status that results in the reasonableness of the search, not any independent justification based on suspicion of evidence or suspicion of a weapon. If this court goes down that road and does say that sort of thing is required, it is present in this case.
Well, and I certainly not suggesting the record suggests this was argued below, but in addition to search incident to arrest, it could have created a Terry type situation as well for reasonable suspicion.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that, to be frankly honest, Your Honor, because the belligerents certainly justified the pat-down. I think what this case is missing is the difference between the pat-down and the reach.
Right. What I'm saying is this: under Terry, it would have justified the pat-down.
Yes.
And it's possible that two things could be true, that the pat-down was legal, but the reaching in the pocket wasn't.
Absolutely. And what we're missing in this particular case is any connection between what the officer felt and the belief that what he felt was contraband. He just merely said that he felt something that that raised a concern with him. He wanted to know what it was, but it didn't rise to the level of probable cause or anything like that.
But he didn't say he thought there was a weapon.
Correct.
In fact, it's pretty clear the officer suspected contraband, but not a weapon.
Right. So once we make that transfer, that transition from the out of the outside of the clothing, which is allowed under Terry, that intrusion into the pocket wouldn't have been justified under Terry, nor would it have been justified under a probable cause standard.
So let's assume by whatever legal basis we get there, we conclude that the pat down was okay. What's the legal basis for the search?
The legal basis for the search is only the search incident to arrest. We have not asserted that the pat-down established independent probable cause to justify the search.
And so it's really the search that's the
correct
pivotal point in this whole case.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. The district court properly granted the state's motion to reconsider in this case because the state failed to show that the warrantless search of Mr. Adams' pocket was justified under any recognized exception to the warrant requirement. Contrary to the state's argument on appeal, there's no legal authority permitting police officers to search an individual in custody on a mental health hold under the community caretaking doctrine. The officer was not engaged in any community caretaking function when he conducted the search of Mr. Adams' pockets. The state contends that...
So, Counselor, are you asserting that the officer transporting him to the hospital was not a community caretaking function?
No, Your Honor. Essentially, I guess that could be construed as community caretaking, but that still does not justify the search. The search has to be justified by another exception, and community caretaking does not justify that. He was not engaged in any community caretaking function that would justify the search of the pocket.
What about concern for the patient's own safety moving from point A to point B?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree that that may be a concern, but there's a general concern here. There's no evidence that he was acting dangerous. There's no evidence that people on an involuntary mental health hold pose a risk of danger. The statute, as was mentioned, requires the person to be mentally ill.
Yeah, but the legal finding of the court that ordered him taken into custody on a mental health hold had to be based on the fact that he was a danger to himself or to others. So hasn't there already been a judicial finding that this guy was a danger to himself or others?
No, Your Honor, the statute does not require that. It requires either a danger to himself or others or that he's gravely disabled. So it does not require that he poses a risk.
Okay. Assuming that's correct, what was found in this case by the magistrate that issued the order?
In terms of the involuntary
commitment. Yeah, why did the court grant the order? On what grounds?
We don't know why he was involuntarily committed, Your Honor. We don't know. We just know that he was involuntarily committed. And a transport was requested.
That seems like a really important fact that should have been developed.
And perhaps, Your Honor, we don't know. And I think in the situation where we don't know why, we don't know, there's no evidence that he posed a risk of danger to himself or others. And again, even if the initial pat frisk was lawful, there's no justification for the search where the officer specifically did not feel any weapons or anything that could harm him. And the officer specifically said he conducted the search because it was his personal policy to do so, not for the safety of Mr. Adams.
Of course, there was later evidence produced that it was a general policy, apparently, that he was unaware of the Twin Falls police to conduct such a search.
Your Honor, there is some evidence of that. On appeal, there's no evidence of any Twin Falls policy. I think in a footnote, district court noted that it was provided. However, the officer testified he wasn't aware that was a policy.
Did I understand you correctly early in your argument to say there's no legal authority to search under a community caretaking function?
No, Your Honor. There's no legal authority to search an individual on a mental health hold under the community care.
Under Idaho law? Because there's several cases cited by the state in their opening brief out of Utah and Washington saying exactly that, actually.
Yes, Your Honor, and those cases are completely different, I would argue. Those cases specifically analyze the language of the state statutes, and two of them determined that based on that language, there was an implied authorization to search. And those statutes in those cases all required that the person pose a danger to themselves or others, whereas the Idaho statute here does not, and it was not argued that the Idaho statute authorizes the search. So the basis for those cases was based on the language of the specific statute.
So address the state's argument that Canyon View could have searched him, and so if Canyon View can do it, then the police who are transporting him to Canyon View can search.
Well, Your Honor, nurses and doctors aren't the police. They're not, in that sense, a state actor where they're bound by the same restrictions as police. They aren't.
Even when they're holding him pursuant to a contract with the state and at the state's direction?
Your Honor, I still believe that they're not state actors. It provides, the Fourth Amendment protects against government action. And again, this just wouldn't justify it in this case. They aren't the police.
Right, but there are at least four theories by which a private actor can be deemed to be a government actor by extension for purposes of Section 1983 liability, for example. So why wouldn't that line of cases apply here in this context?
Well, Your Honor, the state, I did not argue that that it would have inevitably been discovered by a nurse or doctor or anyone else. We're talking about the search by the officer here, the frisk, and then the search into his pockets, and there's no legal justification for that here. The state failed to meet its burden here.
So it's your position then when this individual was taken into custody, taken to Hospital A originally, if when he was admitted the hospital had searched his pockets, that would have been a problem? That would have been illegal?
Your Honor, I don't necessarily think it would have been because they're not state actors. I don't think it applies to them. This isn't a criminal issue for him being transported. He's being transported for mental health issues. It's a civil commitment. And as the state had argued, searches incident to arrest is based on probable cause. It's a whole criminal investigation. Here, the whole purpose is to give aid to Mr. Adams, is to help him under the statute. The officers were just essentially transporting him.
Did the hospital have any legal authority to hold this individual for any reason other than the fact that that was a delegation of power from the state?
Your Honor, no. I think the statute allows them to take into custody a person for a mental health hold, and that's it.
So if somebody's having a mental health issue, they self-check themselves in and the hospital says you can't leave, can they do that?
Well, under the statute, yes. I mean, if someone is so gravely disabled.
And they can do that because a judge signed an order telling them they could do that, right?
Correct, Your Honor, yes, of course they can do that. But again, it's different when we're dealing with the police here. The police conducted the search here. The doctors and the nurses didn't. They aren't state actors. They aren't bound by the same constraints as the police are. It's not the same. A search incident to arrest is completely different. There's the standard of probable cause. That is not present here.
I would agree with you, absolutely, if this was an issue about whether or not this was part of an investigation. If the police were investigating because they were trying to find evidence of a crime. But here I don't think anyone's contending that's what the police were doing. They had the same interest in their own safety and the mental health patient's safety, regardless of whether they suspected him of a crime. In fact, there's no evidence he committed a crime. This was purely motivated out of self-preservation and preservation of the patient, right?
Yes, Your Honor. But as I believe the state has cited to Riley versus California, the interest in protecting officer safety does not justify dispensing with the warrant requirement across the board. There needs to be some individualized suspicion. this general idea that officer safety justifies any search in this situation is not reasonable. It's not reasonable to assume every person on an involuntary mental health hold poses a risk of danger.
Well, let's step back to where we were. Is there any evidence in the record that Canyon View would have searched him upon arrival?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe there's any evidence that the hospital would have.
Is there any evidence in the record that suggests, as opposed to a search, Canyon View may just take anybody who shows up and says, empty out your pockets, take your clothes off, put it in this box, and we'll save it for you?
No, Your Honor, there's nothing like that.
And the latter would not necessarily be a search. If it's somebody, if it's just the hospital saying, hey, take your stuff off and put it in the box, and we're going to give you this outfit to put on.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I want to take you back to the discussion about search incident to arrest. You were talking about there being no legal justification for a search in this case. And, of course, you know, while the state used the term search incident to arrest, I understood it to be we're asking for something that is akin to a search incident to arrest. Obviously, there's no arrest. This is not a criminal case. But we do have situations, do we not, where there is a search incident to arrest and there is no concern about a weapon, no concern about contraband. Let's say, for example, a DUI involving your run-of-the-mill, otherwise upstanding citizen in the community. The soccer mom, farmer down the street, you know, whoever it might be. And there's no real concern about weapons, but there's still going to be a search incident to that arrest when probable cause for the DUI has been found. Would there not be?
Yes, sir. I think you're saying that because there's probable cause for the arrest, that they can search.
There's going to be a search. And why is there going to be a search?
Because that's based on the constitutionality of the arrest itself, the probable cause that gave rise to the arrest.
But why? Why do we allow that? I mean, I understand the legal justification to get there, but what's the practical justification? That person's going in a car, they're under arrest, they're being taken somewhere, right?
Correct.
Even though they may not be a danger at all.
Correct.
All right. In this case, we have a person who is already in custody. Whatever legal justification for that custody needed to happen has happened, correct? And,
correct.
And then the person is going in a police vehicle. Is there a reason? Well, let me not ask you to make the state's case. The state is saying this is a reason to search someone. What is your argument against that? And I'm not talking from, we don't have that exception. We know we don't have that exception. Should there be one? Why should there not be one is what I'm asking you.
Yes, Your Honor. The search for incident to arrest was justified by the need to seize weapons and other things which might be used to assault an officer or effect
his escape,
as well as the need to prevent destruction of evidence. As we know, the destruction of evidence obviously does not apply. However, the concern for officer safety is not, in this instance, in an involuntary mental health hold, is not present to the same extent. Not every person, again, the whole point of the statute is to get this person mental health help. When a person is under arrest, there's probable cause and their privacy concerns are way more diminished. They have to go through a criminal investigation. They're being transported to presumably a police station where they're going to be booked and placed into custody. Here, they're merely just transporting Mr. Adams to another hospital so that he can get mental health care. The concern for officer safety is completely different and does not justify a general exception in this case. Individualized suspicion would be better addressed in these cases, especially when Idaho's statute does does not require the individual to pose a risk of danger to themselves or others.
Am I reading the record correct? As I look at the transcript of the hearing that we've got, it looks like the actual mental health proceedings at least were formally commenced, I think a couple days after he was at St. Luke's. And so is this a situation where he's in the emergency room and as a result of his contact with the medical care providers there, there was the state sought a mental health hold at that time because of his interactions in the emergency room that night?
No, Your Honor, there's no evidence of why this or what came about the involuntary mental health hold. And all we know, I believe the state said that he was belligerent. I don't think that there's that was the case at all. I believe the officer testified the only information he had was that he was confrontational, and that's on page 10 of the motion to suppress transcript. And I believe the court may have found he was initially combative and cooperative and uncooperative, and he was refusing to leave, and they needed help transporting him. But at the time the officers got there, he was nothing but cooperative and compliant. So we don't know why it initially he was put on the mental health hold.
But we don't even know when the mental health hold was issued. Is that what you're saying? We don't even know that it was that night?
Your Honor,
do we know that?
We know that they were called because he was on an involuntary mental health hold. We know that was...
Right, I understand, but we don't know if that involuntary mental health hold was issued that night or at a different time.
I see what Your Honor is saying. Yes, I there isn't, I guess, evidence of that. I presumed that it was at that moment.
And that's my question. I presumed that too. I mean, because the way that I read the conversation between the court and the prosecuting attorney at the time of the hearing, it was these things take a little bit to process. I could, and he gave a citation to the Lincoln County case 2 days later. So in my mind, I went, okay, this guy's in the ER. Something's going on. I don't know what, but it ends up in a phone call to the prosecuting attorney. We need a mental health hold, and that process gets initiated after hours and so we get a verbal mental health hold. Is that a reasonable interpretation of this record?
Your Honor, I presume that was the case. All we know is just that there was some involuntary mental health hold. We don't know, I guess, when. I assumed it was when they transport or asked for the officers to come transport him. So that's all that from the record that I have, I understood.
And importantly, that information in the record doesn't come from an answer to a question, but from a question, right? The attorney asks, now, sir, when you arrived, was it your understanding or did you have an understanding that a doctor had declared Mr. Adams as a mental health hold? And the officer answered, yes. That's all we have.
Right. Yes. That's all. Again, there was no justification for the frisk in this case or the search, and even if the frisk was lawful, again, there was no justification to go further into Mr. Adams' pockets when the officers specifically testified he was not concerned for his safety or concerned that there was any weapon. The district court in this case correctly got it right. The state failed to meet its burden that any exception to the warrant requirement justified the search in this case. Unless there are any further questions, we would ask that this court affirm the district court's decision.
Just real quick, is your position then that the so-called special needs exception doesn't apply here or doesn't even exist in Idaho?
Your Honor, the special needs cases involve typically situations where the public safety comes into play. So I believe there is a quote here from, I supplemented with the case Chandler v. Miller, in limited circumstances where the privacy interests implicated by the search are minimal and where an important government interest furthered by the intrusion would be placed in jeopardy, a requirement of individualized suspicion may be reasonable. And then their special needs concerns other than crime detection may be justified under the rule, and I believe those cases where are discussing, for example, routine searches at airports, DNA tests for, or excuse me, drug tests for athletes. Those cases, I don't see how they apply in this case. And again, from Chandler v. Miller, but where the public safety is not genuinely in jeopardy, the Fourth Amendment precludes the suspicionless search. So I don't understand how the special needs cases come into play here.
Well, some of the U.S. Supreme Court special needs cases have dealt with inmates, probationers, parolees, even students.
Yes, Your Honor, and those are based on the fact that these individuals are already in custody, in criminal custody, and so that further intrusion is reasonable because they're already in custody for a criminal offense. And I would, again, say that that's completely different here. Someone in custody for a criminal offense, the concern for safety is not the present to the same extent as it is where someone's on an involuntary mental health hold. I think those cases are very distinguishable. And again, the interest in officer safety does not justify dispensing with the warrant requirement across the board. There's no reason that there should not be individualized suspicion in this situation or in these situations where individuals are in custody on an involuntary mental health hold. Just because they're in custody does not justify a warrantless search absent any reason that they pose any kind of danger to themselves or others.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, how much time does the appellant have remaining?
10 minutes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Sir?
It's quite a walk. May it please the court. I'd just like to address a few quick points. First off, the attempt to distinguish the cases from the other jurisdictions because they also address state law. Well, those cases address the constitutionality, too. The fact that they address state law has nothing to do with their constitutional analysis. Those cases.
The state here didn't make the argument that this search was permissible under our involuntary hold statute.
That is correct.
I understood that to be Mr. Adams' argument. Is they're distinguishable because the state didn't make that argument here?
I'm not sure how that argument has anything to do with anything in terms of the constitutional question that's before this court. Obviously, the constitutional question is whether the search was reasonable. If it's unreasonable under the Constitution, no legislative grant of an ability to search is going to change that.
So right, but your justification has been search incident to arrest, and this is correct. The same thing. It's a different argument, isn't it, to say that the statute that authorizes an involuntary mental health hold authorizes it. That's different than saying this is like an arrest, you should treat it like search
correct,
incident
to arrest.
Correct,
but that would be a state law question, Your Honor, not a constitutional one, to my understanding. I'm not sure how that invokes any sort of constitutional analysis by looking at whether the statute also endorsed the idea of searching.
Certainly raise the constitutionality of the statute.
It certainly would. And certainly if the legislature chose to limit the ability to search in these types of cases, the legislature could certainly do that as a matter of state law. But the point is, the Fourth Amendment analysis in those cases is spot on for this case, regardless of any analysis of the state statutes. As to the argument about state actors, it is true that non-state actors can violate the Fourth Amendment at will. We would call it some other violation, such as a trespass or a tort or something like that. But ultimately, there's two problems with that argument. The first is that somebody dealing with somebody committed due to a state action is still a state actor. I'm a little bit baffled, and I'm sure that if we were here on a search conducted by a nurse or an orderly, the state appellate public defender would not be conceding, well, the Fourth Amendment has no more application here. I think the most obvious example is we have private prisons. To argue that those guards in private prisons are not state actors in terms of searches and things like that, I think would be obviously erroneous. But the more important...
But the record here, to my way of thinking, is completely silent on the issue of the commitment. I mean, we don't know anything about what happened. We don't know anything about St. Luke's role in this, Canyonview's role in this, who the contractors are. I mean, we don't know.
That is correct. And that is all extraneous to the actual legal analysis in this case. As I recall, the way this came up in the argument would be to analogize what the officer did to what somebody actually involved in the treatment could also do this. So the state made the argument, look, if he could have been searched at the facility by a state actor, he can be searched on his transport to the facility. So that was the state's action. The response to that is, well, that's not analogous because it's not a state actor. Well, that begs the question, really. Number one, it is a state actor, and number two, it doesn't at all answer our question. What if instead of a private facility, it was a state facility? What if it was, the state used to run mental health institutions, mental hospitals? We have a couple of high school mascots that have perhaps imprudently played on that. So whether it's a state facility, whether it's a private facility, that's really not the issue. The issue is whether a government actor can assure the integrity of the facility, can ensure the safety of everybody involved, and the answer is yes. So that brings up the third point, which is we heard a lot about officer safety, but the analysis isn't limited to officer safety. What we're talking about here is the safety of a lot of people. We're talking about the safety of the officer. We're talking about the safety of doctors and nurses and orderlies. We're talking about the safety of the patient himself and other patients.
So, and let's talk about that for a minute. There is there not, quite an interplay between drug use and mental health issues?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And certainly we want the ability in a government institution, or whether the institutionalization is ordered by the government, the ability to be able to control what goes into and out of that facility, especially what goes into it. So that is part of the governmental interest here. It's not just safety, but it's also the integrity and functionality of these facilities and these efforts to rehabilitate people in order to restore them to mental health.
And to Ms. Hefner's point, what about to the ability to help the patient himself?
Yes, that is absolutely part of this. It does no good to try to treat this person if we allow him to smoke methamphetamine or otherwise use drugs in his spare time while on the facility.
So and that would then justify not just the pat-down, but the search? Because
absolutely.
Identifying the presence of a controlled substance,
yes,
might
sir.
Help the doctors diagnose what the problem is better?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that kind of goes back to Justice Zahn's earlier point about evidence. We're not doing this for evidentiary purposes. We are doing this for purposes that tie back to the original community caretaking function of institutionalizing somebody in order to facilitate their recovery from a mental illness.
But we have to weigh the state's interests against the individual's privacy interests, don't we? The state's interests don't win the day every single time.
That is absolutely correct. But again, I would point out, just like a search incident to arrest scenario, it's not a case-by-case analysis. The U.S. Supreme...
Don't take me the wrong way. I'm not necessarily saying it has to be a case-by-case analysis. Honestly, uh-huh. I have to turn that one over in my mind a little bit. But my concern is just because the state wants to search and the state wants to help someone doesn't mean that a search is the only way to do that. And that's where I struggle. Why isn't the show up and take everything off that you've got on and put it in a box and we're going to give you this outfit to wear? Why doesn't that protect the state's interests? Because as we know, there's a whole line of cases that talk about the state can't force someone to take medication. The state can't do a number of things that it may want to do to help someone because that individual's privacy rights and their self-interests override the government's competing justifications.
Absolutely. That is absolutely true. And it is 100% true that even I will say government benevolence is a two-edged sword. It is something that does not justify intrusion on constitutional rights just because you want to do the right thing. That would be an absolutely horrible standard, and is, of course, not what we're advocating for here. But look at your analogy to put your clothes in a box. Number one, I'm not sure how that's not a search. I mean, if the drugs fell out while he's putting it in the box, obviously that would be something. The whoever it is then takes custody of those things. May have to inventory that so that they're protected from liability elsewhere. And of course, this wasn't an option available to the officer. He wasn't going to strip the guy down naked and stuff him in his car. So, there may be less intrusive options in certain circumstances. But that doesn't automatically, likewise, lead to, it's automatically unconstitutional either. So, yes, there is a certain amount of balancing here. But that balancing, according to every case that's looked at it, goes in favor of ultimately deciding the constitutionality of these sorts of searches is set. It is fine. It is not a constitutional intrusion to conduct a search of somebody in custody where you have these competing interests and you have a reduced expectation of privacy. So, in conclusion, the state would again request that this court reverse the district court's order of suppression and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Counsel, each of you, we appreciate your argument. This matter is now under advisement, and we will render a decision accordingly. We will recess for approximately 15 minutes.
All rise, please.